Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Blog Talk Radio and Secular Talk Radio. My name, of course, is Kyle Kalinske. You know the show you're listening to. A lot of great stuff today, a lot of interesting stuff today. You want to talk about welfare queens? I'm going to give you some numbers that were released in a new report from Citizens for Tax Justice. I'm going to show you who the real welfare queens are in the United States. Spoiler alert, it's not poor black people. And also, as we move along here, I mean, Marco Rubio calling for war. How pathetic is that? Bill O'Reilly talking about gender politics is the funniest thing you're going to hear all day. That's a guarantee. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Also, Michelle Bachmann, she said something that wasn't crazy yesterday. She's right back to saying crazy things today. Nobody's surprised. And Wolf Blitzer, of all people, actually responded in a way that was good. I did not see that coming, so we'll talk about all that. Catholic League President Bill Donahue is going to go on CNN and make an ass of himself. Chris Cuomo was actually pretty aggressive with him, but I got a specific clip I want to show you from that. Of course, we got our usual Christian Taliban douchebags rearing their ugly head in the show. And we're going to be joined by Lilith Penn in the second hour, which is always great. It's always fun. Talk a little bit about what's going on in Texas right now. Oh, interesting. For maybe the first time in secular talk history, I'm going to disagree with an expert on something, which I'm really not qualified to do, but nonetheless, I'm going to do it because I find it, maybe it's just my problem and I can't wrap my mind around it, but just to give you the cliff notes on that, long story short, somebody's trying to develop an alcohol that gives you the pleasure of alcohol, like the drunkenness and the highness, I guess you could say, of alcohol, without actually giving you the negative effects. Like, you know, the hangover and the withdrawal and all that stuff. And I'm skeptical. I don't think that's possible. And I'll explain why in the second hour. Or maybe that's not fair. I'm on the fence about it. So we'll talk about that. I got to say, man, I'm disappointed in myself. This is just a random side note, but, like, I'm not, like, a big fashion guy or anything. You probably know that if you listen to the show on a regular basis. I like colorful shirts and stuff sometimes. But, like, I throw on a maroon shirt. I have on this beige jacket. I'm like, all right, this looks like it'll match well. For whatever reason, it stuck out to me when it was in my closet. And then I'm looking at myself now in the camera, and I look like a 1970s polyester-wearing weirdo. I don't know why, man. I don't know why certain things look good when they're not on you. But then the second they get on you, you're like, oh, right, this looks horrendous. And I also got, I don't know, my hair's frizzy and shit today. I put it all up instead of the little faux hawk I do. I look strange. I feel strange and I look strange. But that might lead to a good show. You never know. If my emotions aren't, on point, that might be a good thing for the show. All right. So let's get started. I want to do that with some broad stuff here. Talk a little bit about what the next election is going to look like. Got some new numbers in that respect. There's a new New York Times CBS poll that was released Wednesday, and they found that Republicans have a slight edge over Democrats going into this year's midterm elections. So here are the specifics on that. 42% of voters favor Republicans right now. 39% favor Democrats. Now keep in mind the error rate is plus or minus 3 percentage points. So even best case scenario for the Democrats, it would be a dead tie. But it's more likely that they're actually trailing a little bit. But here's what's really interesting. The poll also found voters approve of Republicans less than Democrats overall. Well, that doesn't seem to make much sense. How could you approve of one party but then say we're going to vote for the party we don't approve of? Okay, let me give you some more specifics on that. While 42% of those surveyed said they say they view Democrats favorably. Just 33% say they see Republicans in a positive light. Meanwhile, 53% have an unfavorable view of Democrats compared to a 61% unfavorable rating for Republicans. So they like Democrats more, but they're just not that into voting for them. So as I was reading it, it basically, the idea struck me, or the analogy struck me, that this is like a gorgeous girl that you're into in high school that likes you more than she likes Bobby, but she doesn't like you like that. Like, Bobby's the badass who, oh, I want to go out on a date with Bobby, but yeah, me and you can hang out and just be friends. That's what I thought when I was reading this, and I was thinking, oh my God, that is so sad. It is so pathetic. So what this poll demonstrates is two things. Number one, historical trends are always overlooked whenever we're talking about elections. And the only person who doesn't overlook it is maybe Nate Silver, who's, you know, the statistician who's been 100% on point with his predictions based on the polling. But everybody else overlooks that, historical trends. So that needs to be kept in mind, that whenever there's an election cycle where, you know, back-to-back Democratic victories, which is what we saw with Obama and with the Senate with the Democrats, it almost always invariably swings back to the other party, whoever that happens to be. But then point number two is that this shows you the Democrats are pathetic at making their case, because you couldn't dream or wish or pray for an easier opponent than the Republican Party. But they just can't capitalize on it. They apparently have no clue what they're doing. They have no idea how to market themselves and sell their ideas and get it through to regular people that, hey, we're the people that are looking out for you. I mean, look at the laundry list of facts about what the Republican Party has done. They shut down the government to try to repeal a law that already passed. They were renegotiating a law that's already a law. It's no longer a bill. They shut down the government when they didn't get their way. They are literally killing 17,000 people because they won't expand Medicaid. I mean, it was a Harvard study that said 17,000 people are going to die as a result of this. They tried to repeal Obamacare, what is it now, 49 times? They used the most filibusters in the history of the country. They blocked gun background checks, which 91% of the American people wanted. They still don't support gay marriage, even though 58% of the American public does. They still don't support a minimum wage hike, even though 80% of America does. I mean, the fact that you can't beat these guys, in my mind, it's like a Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas thing. Like, here you have one guy or one party that is just clearly, empirically, verifiably superior in terms of their policies line up more with the American people. That's the whole idea of a politician. Oh, you're supposed to legislate the will of the people. Okay, well, these guys are better. They're going to do that more. So it's a superior product. But they don't know how to get that through because they're so stupid. See, they think naively, well, if we do something good, people will know we do things good, and then they'll vote for us. No. You got to brag about it. I mean, the Republicans, after they do something bad, they brag about it as if it is good, and they make people believe, oh, well, maybe that's good. He seems confident. But the Democrats do something positive, and then they're scared of their own shadow. They don't even want to bring it up. What the fuck is wrong with you guys? It's so sad. It's so pathetic. The old school Democratic model of triangulation, you know how all the strategists say, no, you guys are supposed to be the calm, reasonable, relaxed alternative that's above the fray, and you're the centrists, and you agree with everybody. I'm just looking for the high-minded ideals here. That worked in the 1990s, okay? And it worked then for a reason, because we were just coming off of an era where the Democrats appeared to be too left-wing, with the hippie movement and LSD and putting flowers in the barrel of guns. Mainstream America said, okay, we're not with those guys. They seem kind of out of it, okay? Hippie nonsense bullshit. We're not with them, okay? But today's not the early 1990s anymore. Now the American people look at the far right and the neoconservatives and say, those guys are fucking nuts. They're religious zealots. Their economic ideology is like a fucking religion also, in the sense that, oh, deregulation for everything, cut taxes for the rich for everything. They want more war all the time. Okay, that's extreme. That's crazy. We don't like that. So they want somebody to stand up and be a progressive and argue for their case, and the Democrats don't do that. They're still stuck in the 1990s model. And it's sad. It's sad. If you had somebody who was the chief strategist for the Democratic Party or for the Obama administration or for a lot of these Senate politicians or just people in Congress in general, you could wipe out the Republicans election after election after election after election, but you never capitalize on their fuck-ups because you just don't have it in you. You just don't have that fight, that go-for-the-neck, Mortal Kombat-style fatality mindset. And you're going to suffer as a result of that. You're going to lose more elections than you should, and it's your fault. I always hate covering this aspect of politics, too, I should say, because it almost delegitimizes the important stuff, you know? Like, here we are talking about who's going to win the election as if that's, like, super important. I mean, we all know what the real issues are. The real issues are the systemic issues. The real issues, poverty, hunger, war, income inequality. And yes, it matters, and you should vote. I'm not on the page of people who say just check out of elections completely. I'm on the page that you should vote, but we should also be digging deeper for real systemic reform through Wolfpack or through other outlets where we can actually affect change by getting in their face. Who knows, man? Some people, you know, are of the opinion that the Democrats are, like, literally paid to lose. You know, like, they get paid by the same corporation that the Republicans get paid by, and their job is to play the good cop. They're playing good cop, bad cop with you in an interrogation. So the Republicans come in, and they're like, we're going to cut your health care, and we're going to just stop all the social programs. We're going to go to war with, like, six countries. And the Democrats come in, and they're the good cop. Like, oh, no, my partner's crazy, man. You don't need to stop. You don't need to pay attention to that guy. Look, I'm here. I'm on your side. We just want to know what's going on. You know, what should we do politically? Well, you know, we'll help you out. We'll throw you a bone. Oh, you want some minor movement on gay marriage? Here, we'll give you some minor movement on gay marriage. Okay. Will you vote for us now? And then, meanwhile, they're continuing to rob you. We gave you a little bit. What? We're better than the other guy. The other guy's out of his mind. Yeah, but both of you were fucking idiots. Speaking of robbery, now we'll go on to that tax report that I referenced just before. Citizens for Tax Justice just released a report analyzing the 2008 to 2012 federal income tax filings of 288 Fortune 500 companies. And of those 288 companies, 111 of them spent at least 1 year paying zero or less in an effective federal tax rate. Now, that's amazing. I mean, really think about that. And they also say 26 companies consistently paid nothing in taxes and took welfare. So let me give you some details. I'll give you some companies and tell you what their effective tax rate was in that time span. Con Edison. They paid a negative 1.1% tax rate. Verizon, negative 1.8% in taxes. Duke Energy, negative 2.2% in taxes. Tenet Healthcare, negative 6% in taxes. General Electric, negative 11.1% in taxes. NiSource, negative 13.6% in taxes. PG&E, negative 16.7% in taxes. And Pepco, negative 33% in taxes. Now, a negative tax rate is exactly what you think it is. It just means that they are getting a welfare check from the taxpayers. Hardworking middle-class people that go 9 to 5, take care of their kids, do all that stuff, upstanding citizens, your tax dollars are going to fund these companies. Now, keep in mind, these companies are already profitable. They're already profitable. So why are we giving them money? Because the politicians are corrupt. Because the rich and the corporations and the big businesses, they have rigged the tax code in favor of themselves. If you pay the politicians, which they do, they're going to get something in return. This is what they get in return right here. So whenever you hear the Republicans try to divert your attention and scream about welfare queens and, oh, poor people and black people and old people and minorities, they come in this country, they leech off the system, they're moochers, they're parasites, it's wrong, it's terrible. Keep in mind, what are we really talking about when we talk about social programs like those? We're talking about, hey, let's make sure that these young kids can eat and not starve. Give them $1.30 a meal when their parents are unemployed. So we're taking care of them to make sure that we're civilized human beings, okay? That's what we're talking about in that respect, giving grandma health care through Medicare, okay? That's, oh, yeah, welfare, making sure grandma doesn't die. Yeah, how terrible, how outlandish. So that kind of welfare is totally justifiable, and it's not even really welfare. They're earned benefit programs, I believe is the proper term, yeah, because you're actually paying into it, okay? So why is it that Republicans and conservatives get angry at that kind of welfare, which actually goes towards something that is morally correct, but they don't say anything about this kind of welfare? In fact, they actively vote for this kind of welfare. They love this kind of welfare. And again, it goes back to something we were talking about yesterday with that Utah Republican who proposed a bill to put up barriers for people getting divorced. Why are they doing that? They don't care about small government. If the party actually cared about small government, they wouldn't have the position they have on abortion. They wouldn't have the position they have on gay marriage. They wouldn't have the position they have on drug testing welfare recipients. They wouldn't have the position they have on Wall Street bailouts. They wouldn't have the position they have on the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War and American imperialism. They have across the board big government positions on those issues. And in areas like this, corporate welfare all day long, man. All day long they'll take the corporate welfare and they love it. And they're not going to utter a peep of disagreement. They're not going to say a single thing about, you know, budget cutting or deficits. No, what they're concerned about in areas like this are taking care of my donors, taking care of the people who legally bribed me. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. The old school cliche, which is totally true, especially in politics in the United States of America. So remember, next time you hear them talking about welfare, they don't really give a shit about welfare. They don't really dislike welfare. They love welfare as long as it's for rich men, rich white men in suits and ties, their buddies, or for themselves. How many times have we did the story on farm subsidies? Remember that? That story is incredible. How many Republican politicians took for their farms welfare? What happened, guys? I thought you were, you know, you were the responsible party that doesn't like government money. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But it came, when it came to farm subsidies for their personal family farms, then they love big government. Hypocrites. Hypocrites is what it is. All right, now, one more before we take a break here. Reuters had a good article today highlighting the way that an economy is supposed to work, and the IMF, International Monetary Fund, used to tell countries to focus only on growth and debt reduction, okay? And that's typically what people would associate with conservative ideals. Like, that's a right-wing position. But they were basing that theory on the idea that a rising tide lifts all boats. It's the old Reaganomics mentality of, oh, that we free up the marketplace, deregulate, and then the rising tide will lift all boats. And it'll, you know, that'll help everybody, not just the rich. We'll all automatically be better off. Well, after a while, the empirical data kept flowing in, and they just realized that's nonsense. So, for example, India has been growing economically for a very long time, but how is the average Indian doing? You tell me. They're not doing that much better than they were 15 years ago. So now the IMF says, quote, income inequality can lead to slower or less sustainable economic growth, while redistribution of income, when measured, does not hurt and can help an economy. Interesting. They never used to talk about income inequality. Now they're talking about it. Researchers at the IMF now posit that, quote, it would still be a mistake to focus on growth and let inequality take care of itself, not only because inequality may be ethically undesirable, but also because the resulting growth may be low and unsustainable. We find that inequality is bad for growth in and of itself, and we can say that redistribution by itself doesn't seem to be bad for growth unless it is very large. So how long have we been saying this for? How long have progressives been saying this for? If you don't do wealth redistribution, okay, the top 1% sucks up all the wealth. Or in fact, it's probably even more lopsided than that. The top 0.001% sucks up all the wealth, and everybody else just has to fight for the crumbs. It's a gilded society. That is the natural state of a capitalist economy. But if you have the government step in and be that third party, the independent referee that acts on behalf of the people, you can do moderate forms of wealth redistribution like every civilized country in the world. So, for example, what is the police force? That is wealth redistribution. How about the firemen? Redistribution. Social Security, Medicare, food inspectors, the FDA, which makes sure you don't get cholera or E. coli or the Ebola virus from eating some tainted meat. That's all wealth redistribution. The military, which conservatives love to talk about how they love it. That's all wealth redistribution. So the idea is, and now the IMF is catching on to it and they're talking about it, you need wealth redistribution. It's a good thing. You need it. Just the question is, where do you draw the line? Any sane person is in favor of some form of wealth redistribution. Even Ayn Rand said, yeah, for a police force, maybe we might need to tax a little bit. So everybody's in favor of it. Just to what extent? That's the question. There is a smart balance, and there's reasonable parameters for disagreement, but there's a smart level, a balanced level, where most modernized countries, or at least the best countries in the world, objectively, according to the statistics, they've drawn the line somewhere. So they say, you know, healthcare, that's off the table. That's funded through taxes. Yes, that is redistribution of wealth. You know, college, education, that's all funded. Daycare, so people don't have to, you know, spend all their paycheck for somebody to watch their kid while they're making money to try to take care of their kid. It's this giant paradox. Roads, bridges, basic marketplace regulations, so you don't have people making capitalist, ridiculous short-term bets and crashing the economy in the long run. These are the things that a government is for. This is why you need wealth redistribution. Make sure that the people at the margins of society, really old people, really poor people, that we're not in a situation like it's the 1500s where they die in the street and nobody gives a shit about them. There is a purpose and a place for wealth redistribution. And the problem is, that gets under my skin so much, is that we haven't had anybody actually stand up and argue for these things, you know? People are getting it even without an argument being presented for it. Could you imagine if somebody actually made the argument for it who was, you know, in the political spotlight? Oh, my God, it'd be overwhelming. People are like, oh, yeah, why the fuck have we said redistribution is a bad thing? Why is that a demonized term? Why is that a bad word? It's just that the right has done such a fantastic job at what they do, propaganda. If you have Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the rest of them go out there and say redistribution is evil, 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 evil. They did that with the word liberal. Liberal, 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 bad, bad, bad. And then people, after a while, it seeps its way into the mainstream of the culture, and it's one of those things where people, it's just taboo. No, I'm not in favor of wealth redistribution. No, I'm not liberal. Why the fuck are you running from your shadow? Stand up. Make an argument. Explain yourself. You could say, yes, I do. I do like those things. Absolutely. It depends what specifically we're talking about, but in some cases, absolutely I'm in favor of wealth redistribution. You're not. Oh, I didn't know you hate the police force. Why do you hate the police force? Is that kind of extreme? Oh, I didn't know you hate the military. You want to ban the military? That's crazy, man. This is how you make an argument. This is how you stand up. We got a bunch of – I'll hold back here. I'm not going to go into any deeper stuff. I could start spewing more personal attacks here and insults, but I'll bite my tongue. But just know, the IMF is catching on to it. All these world agencies need to catch on to it. The different – progressive parties around the world need to catch on to it. And stop being ashamed. You know, learn from the Scandinavian model. Learn from the European model. There's a lot of stuff we can take from them and incorporate into America that, yes, would make us better. I know that a lot of goofy conservatives hate that, but it's the truth. All right, now. Break time, biznitches. When we come back, oh, remember the guy who snuck into the Wall Street Secret Society party that we talked about? These guys were dressing in drag and whatnot. He's got a book coming out. I want to read you a little piece on that, which is really interesting. He kind of figured out exactly what's going on in the Wall Street culture among the young guys on Wall Street. That's really interesting. We'll talk about that. We got Marco Rubio calling for war. Bill O'Reilly decides to talk about gender issues. All that stuff is hilarious. All that stuff you can't miss. So stay right there. We'll be right back. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We're just getting started here.
What would it be, and would you call it to his face, if you were faced with him in all his glory? What would you ask if you had just one question?
All right, welcome back, guys. Jump right on in here. Kevin Roos is the journalist we spoke about last week. He's the guy who snuck into the Wall Street Secret Society party and saw all the dudes in drag that were mocking the poor, crazy situation. Well, apparently he has an entire book on Wall Street coming out called Young Money Inside the Hidden World of Wall Street's Post-Crash Recruits. Now, the book is a little different from the stunt that he pulled in its content. He actually gets permission and follows eight 20-something-year-olds around Wall Street at their jobs. They're like the newbies on Wall Street. So he gets to see how they live. And the findings are spectacular and enlightening. So in an interview with Huffington Post, he said, quote, "I expected going into this that I'd find a bunch of young bankers who spend all their time doing coke and going to strip clubs and driving fast cars. That's the stereotype. I didn't find any of that. In fact, most of the young bankers that I followed were pretty depressed. They worked 100 hours a week. They never saw their friends. They had no ability to plan for events because everything could be interrupted by work. And so even though they were making good money, it was almost like it didn't matter because they were so unhappy." Wow. That's fascinating. So the more I read about this, and then I was I sat back and I thought about it, and I thought, well, wait a second, that makes perfect sense. Not even the obvious part, which is that they work all the time and then they're depressed as a result of it. That's a given. But just the fact that even within the confines of Wall Street, there is a rigid hierarchy, and it's not like everybody on Wall Street is exactly the same and they're living that high, mighty lifestyle where they do whatever they want, and the coke and the strippers and the mansions and the Ferraris and the Maseratis. No, no. That is just reserved for the head honchos, for the guys at the top. Now, we actually heard that aspect of the story from the other week, like I said, when Kevin Roos snuck into that secret society party with all the billionaires on Wall Street and the CEOs and the head honchos. And those are the guys who are doing the coke and going around with the strippers, and they have six vacation homes, and they're trying to insulate themselves. And think about it. So the guys who eventually get to the top, they become like dictators. They become like authoritarian, fascist kind of characters. And they make the newbies bust their fucking ass 24/7. And this is the perfect example of that. Did you know they only get one day off? Only Saturdays. And supposedly that's a new policy that they've kind of implemented on Wall Street, where beforehand everybody worked 7 days a week. So all the young guys working 7 days a week, it was just crazy, nonstop work. You don't have any free time. You don't have any life whatsoever. And keep in mind, these guys, I know this sounds kind of pretentious, but they only make about, you know, 250 grand, maybe 400 grand max a year, the ones that he's talking about here. So, and I know that's a lot, don't get me wrong, but for not having a life at all, I don't think I would take that amount of money to essentially sell my soul and have no life whatsoever. I couldn't do that. But the other guys are the ones making $20 million a year, $30 million a year, the huge bonuses when they bankrupted their companies, the ones that took the bailout, the ones that have billions of dollars in the bank, literally. So there's this two-world thing going on right now where you have the haves and the have-nots within Wall Street. You have the ones who just bust their ass and only get paid the 250 grand, 300 grand or whatever, and the ones who sit on their ass all day and do nothing, and they're the billionaires. They are the ones who have, you know, corrupted the political system, bought the politicians, get the bailouts, rig the markets, make casino capitalist bets, commit fraud, and turn around and bet against a product that they just sold as being good like they did at Goldman Sachs. So it's a crazy, scary world over there, man, and it just shows you we really have in the U.S., like, if an alien came down and he saw how Wall Street functions and what's going on, they'd be like, you're doing it exactly wrong. Like, do you not realize you probably only have one chance at being a conscious being, and you should probably try to be happy and find things that are fulfilling and have plenty of leisure time? And what are you guys doing? You got these soulless addicts to money, and that's exactly what they are. There's another article, I forget where it was, I think New York Magazine, where somebody wrote about how I was on Wall Street, I had to leave because I became addicted to money, like it was heroin or cocaine. Okay, so you have money addicts at the top who are calling all the shots, and all they care about is greed, all they care about is, you know, hedonistic fulfillment. And then everybody else is like, you know, busting their ass for nothing, and they're miserable. An alien would be like, blow up the whole fucking thing and start over. What do you guys look stupid? You're just wasting your time. Fascinating stuff, man. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. I don't know if I've ever talked about this on air before. I have some friends that work on Wall Street. And one of them was lucky enough to get into a bank that is an American. It's a French bank. And it's funny how the atmosphere there is significantly more laid back than other places on Wall Street. And it's interesting hearing him tell his stories about what goes on there. And it's funny how he always talks about, like, a lot of people who get into that kind of a lifestyle, they've convinced themselves almost to be this, like, soulless shell of a human being, like a caricature, you know? Like, they saw the movie Boiler Room or Wall Street, and they said, yeah, I want to be like Gordon Gekko. Yeah, I want to be like the guys in Boiler Room. I want to screw people out of their money and pretend like I'm doing them a favor. And it's this, it's a really sad thing, because, not to get too philosophical or anything, but you're dehumanizing yourself in that scenario. I don't want to be too hard and say you're wasting your life, but there's certainly an aspect of that in there, you know? Like, yeah, you chose to act like that, and you chose this as a life path or a career path or whatever, but you're paying for it. There's consequences to that, probably happiness consequences that you're either feeling right now or you're going to feel down the road. All right, now, let's go to Marco Rubio. Switching gears, we'll do some foreign policy stuff here. Marco Rubio decided that it would be a good idea to take to the Senate and call for war with Iran. He said, quote, I appreciate the work that diplomats working in the State Department do. There is a role for diplomacy in the world, but I think diplomacy also requires you to understand its limitations. It is very difficult to negotiate settlements and agreements with governments and individuals who don't ever feel bound by them, who see them as one-way streets, who see them as tactics and vehicles to buy time, and that's what we're dealing with here. If in the end these negotiations fail, and I tragically have to say they are destined to fail, and Iran retains their enrichment capability and eventually develops a nuclear weapon, it is the men and women in uniform of these United States, our sons and daughters, our neighbors, our friends, our mothers, our brothers, our sisters, and our fathers, whom we will ask, as we always do, to go solve the problem for us. But if we put in place sanctions that clearly articulate and lay out the price they will have to pay to continue with these ambitions, we may be able to delay that and even prevent it. Otherwise, that day will come. So he's very plainly calling for more sanctions on Iran in the middle of the negotiations. And he's saying, well, that's probably not going to work either, and then we're going to have to attack. Yeah, great timing there, Marco. This guy must really be on top of his shit. Here's a headline from 1 week ago, quote, new IAEA report, International Atomic Energy Agency, shows Iran complying with nuclear agreement. So peace worked. Period. That's it. That's it. Done. Boom. Done. Okay, do you not get that? You had John Kerry and the State Department and President Obama, and you know, they decided to negotiate with Rouhani and the Iranian team. Both sides had shown signs of, let's work something out here. Let's not be crazy. Let's not be kooky. Let's figure this out. President Rouhani has said from day one, I'm not interested in nuclear weapons. I'm just not. We don't want to build them. We think that's going to cause more trouble than it's going to solve. And we know what the Americans did in 1953 when they overthrew our government. We're not looking to give them an excuse to do that again. So we're done, man. We're done. Boom. So what happened? They work out a deal where they not only do they say we're not going to develop nuclear weapons and we don't want them, they also say the IAEA gets to come in and check whenever they want, and they get to see exactly what's going on with our nuclear facilities. And that happened. So they're not building a weapon. We're done here. We're done. There's peace. We've gotten exactly what we wanted, and in return for them not doing that, we loosened some sanctions on them. But here dumbass Marco Rubio is going, I want to increase sanctions on them. Why would you do that? Then, if anything, you're giving them more of an incentive to do nuclear enrichment, just to shove their thumb in our eye because we shoved our thumb in their eye and we would be the ones who started it in your dumbass scenario. This guy, he's just not a smart person. And the Republican Party, they're just not smart people. There were some Democrats who originally came out in favor of this, Menendez and a few others, and then eventually most of them backed off of it because there was a huge outcry from most people in the country. If you look at the polls on this issue, and IPAC also backed away from it, which is incredible. The Jewish lobby said, we're originally in favor of it, then like, yeah, no, maybe not. Obama pressed on it for one of the few times he's ever done that, where he stood up and said, what are you guys, fucking stupid? We have a peace deal, it's working, and you're trying to put sanctions to screw the peace deal? What do you have, fucking Swiss cheese in your brain? Are you morons? Well, he didn't say it like that, but during the State of the Union, he talked about it's silly to not continue to do what we're doing. So it's amazing. If you look at the polls on this, the American people are like, no, no more sanctions. Let the peace deal work its magic. And also, here's a deeper question for Marco Rubio. Is there a single issue where either he or the Republican Party lines up with the facts or the American people? I don't think there is. I don't think there's a single issue where they do that. So, for example, gun background checks. 91% of the American people were in favor of it. The Republican Party, totally against it. Unanimous, across the board. They're not even representing their own base. Isn't that amazing? I'm blown away by that. Minimum wage increase, 80% of the American people in favor of it. Majority of Democrats and Republicans. They're universally against it. What the fuck are you doing? I mean, these guys, it's... Now, final point I'll make here. CBS poll. This is a CBS poll on the issue of Iran and war with Iran. Only 2 in 10 Americans, 20% of Americans, would go to war with Iran. That's already overwhelming. Only 20% are like, yeah, war, okay, fine. 80% say fuck no, but Marco Rubio still wants it. Anyway, and it's not just only 20% would go to war with Iran. It's 20% would go to war with Iran if they either tested a bomb or attacked Israel. So even if they attack Israel, the American people, only 20% say, sure, maybe now we can go to war. Now go talk to any politician. They say, well, if they attack Israel, where all systems go. It's not even a question. Boom, we're there tomorrow. But whoa, the American people aren't even in favor of that. And you're just like, yeah, no, it's a give and go. Now it gets even better. A quarter, 25%, would go if they either attacked U.S. soil, and another quarter would go if they attacked a U.S. fleet. Okay, that's even more liberal than me. That's the American people going, yeah, if they attack U.S. soil, if it's some random base or some shit, we still don't want to go to war. We're tired of war. I think I'm more conservative. If they attack us, then yes, we can defend ourselves and attack back. But it shows you we're so tired of war, the American people, and we are rightfully tired of war. And I know they don't get this and they don't give a shit because they're so corrupt and they're bought and paid for and they're stupid. But you're supposed to represent us. The whole purpose of a representative democracy is, if this isn't a constitutional issue, then it's an issue for the people. So representative democracy, you look at the opinion polls, you look at what Americans want, and then you say, okay, we will do your bidding. They haven't done that in so long, and they're not even pretending to try to do that. You have Marco Rubio giving speeches where he wants to make a dictatorial fascist decision and override everybody in the country. So childish. All right. Now we'll go to Bill O'Reilly in just a second after I take a sip of my water. Caught this right before I came on air. This was great. Last minute, if the story was released like 5 minutes later, we'd be asked out. I wouldn't be able to cover it. Bill O'Reilly talking about gender issues is going to be the funniest thing you'll hear all day.
I know you probably thought about this very much, Kirsten.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be some downside to having a woman president, right? Something that may not fit with that office, correct?
Run the rest.
I'm going to say no, Bill.
So there's no downside to having a woman.
Just because you're female, that it would something. Well, let me ask you this. What's the downside of a man being president?
Oh, you got three years? I mean, look at the guys we've had in there since.
But
18,
is that because they're men or is it because of the people that are in office?
Look, men are men and women are women, and there's a difference. Okay, there's a difference between the genders. Now, men, they're tied up, and a lot of them in their macho image and that kind of thing, and they act like, you're not going to push me around. That could be a deficit, you know? They're not as kind of open to sensitive discussion, maybe, as women. There's got to be a downside for a woman. Do you know one?
I'm having a tough time with this one too, Bill. I think that depends on the individual. Of course, there's a downside to certain individual women.
You both don't see any gender deficiency to lead the free world.
I've literally not once in my life agreed with Kate Obenchain until right now. I mean, what she said is the obvious right answer. It depends on the individual. I mean, imagine he asked that question about another group of people. There's got to be a downside to having a Jew in office. No? No? What's the downside for Jews? Anybody? There's got to be a downside to have a black in office. Am I right, people? I mean, a black in office? I mean, what's going on here? Such generalized questions are so stupid, just by their nature, because it's such a simpleton's approach to thinking. Like, you're admitting you're willing to think in these gross, broad strokes, just like, this group is X. What is that? What is that about? And that's not to say, and this is an important point, that's not to say that there aren't some definitive differences between men and women, very broadly speaking. So, for example, men have dicks, women have vaginas. On average, our testosterone levels are higher and their estrogen levels are higher. Our physical statures, obviously, on average, they're very different. So, yes, there are some hardcore biological differences. But apart from the simple, hard biological differences, it's not like he acts like we all speak Hindi and they speak Swahili. And we're like, I don't understand. What are you saying or doing? Is that some sort of sign you're trying to give me? I need some sort of interpreter here that speaks woman. Bill, you know what it is? It shows you the old school mindset. It's a glimpse into, you know, the 1950s, 1960s Leave It to Beaver mentality, where he's got a lot of ideas that aren't thought out. They're just reflexive. It's things that he would describe as, like, duh ideas or of course ideas or, oh, it's common sense. Well, what do you mean it's common sense? You can't just assert something like that in a confident way and act as if, like, people are dumb if they don't agree with you. When he's like, but there's clearly a difference and there has to be a downside. Whoa. Define your terms, dude. What are you talking about? Give specifics. Give, like, it's just all broad strokes. It's all... Well, I don't know. I grew up in a system where women had a certain place and men had a certain place, so any deviation from that I'm going to assume is a deviation from the nature of the person. But no, you see, he disregards nurture, right? And by the way, again, to be clear, I'm not saying that everything is all nurture, but he is saying everything is all nature. There's no balance in his mindset. There's no actual breakdown or thought or look at the evidence and the available data to say, well, this part might be nature, this part here might be nurture, you know? Like, in his mind, it's just things are the way they are because they're supposed to be that way. So when a woman was in the kitchen, when all she did was blow her husband and take care of the kids, and there was the white picket fence and the 9-to-5 jobs and yada, yada, when everybody knew their place, oh, what a great time that was. So I'll ask every question with that as my basis, with that as my starting point, with that as this is the right thing. But it's not the right thing. Just because you grew up in that scenario or just because society acted like that for, you know, a 30-year time span doesn't mean that that's objectively better or the right way to have a society. I mean, for example, like these guys – They always talk about the Bible, right? Oh, well, we like biblical values and traditional values. But wait a second. Traditional values is polygamy. So your idea of the subservient wife who stays home and cooks and cleans and does that stuff and the man who goes out and works and provides, that's not constant. That's not biblical. Biblical is polygyny. We were hunter-gatherers through most of, you know, our time on this planet. So what does science say and what does the Bible say? That there was a man and multiple women. You know, back in going way back to when we were hunter-gatherers, we had essentially a group sex. It was like traveling nomadic hunter-gatherer tribes, and everybody fucked everybody because it was the best way to ensure that you can pass on the genes, you know, time after time. Is that traditional values to Bill O'Reilly? Is it traditional values for everybody to fuck everybody and for there's no hard place for anybody in society? Does he look at any of the other areas of nature? I mean, there are certain species of animals, for example, where the female is the dominant one. The female is, you know, the producer who goes out and earns the living, so to speak, or, you know, it does the hunting or whatever, and the male has the what we would view as the 1950s female role. So it's reflexive in its nature. It's reactionary in its nature. He's not a thinker. He's not a thinker, and that's so apparent. Like everything he does, you know, there was a great article about some liberal who decided to watch Fox News, only Fox News for a month as some sort of a social experiment. And the guy was like, the main thing that was apparent, like, you get comfortable watching a guy like Bill O'Reilly because he's such a great broadcaster and he's a great debater and he's a great talker. And he knows how to make his point, you know, in a shorter amount of words. So it, like, pierces through right to your psyche and you're like, oh, I get it, where somebody else could drag on and on. But the thing that he said is he goes out of his way to not have nuance. Like, he goes out of his way to not think about both sides of an issue or the interesting nooks and crannies that you have to dive deeper to understand. Like, he purposefully avoids stuff like that. What's his face? Joe Muto, the Fox News mole, told a story about how one day – he was a producer on O'Reilly's show. He talks about how one day O'Reilly wanted to open up the show with one of the memos that somebody sent him earlier in the morning, that this was a story for the day, that there was some sort of government getaway for a certain agency that was like, oh, they overspent and the muffins cost $20 each or whatever, and he ran with the story. But he was told before he went on air that story was debunked. It's not true. He's like, what do you mean it's not true? It is true. I read the story myself, and it's right. We're gonna go with it. And the guy's like, no, you don't get it. We talked to the person from the hotel. The guy said that's not correct. It wasn't $20 for each muffin. It was $20 for the entire fucking meal. He's like, no, we're going live. We're going to do it. And he did it on the show, and he kept doing it on the talk show circuit. He kept bringing up that point. Now, why did he do that? Because it fits his broader narrative. So if it fits his broader narrative and the mental framework he already set up in his head, then there's no looking back for a guy like Bill O'Reilly. So with that, apply that to the points he just made there. Like, well, there's got to be something wrong with a woman president. You know, that's his way of saying, I know that they're not supposed to be leaders because I grew up in a system where they weren't leaders, so of course they're not supposed to be leaders. That's what that is. It's a reflexive, reactionary mental process that says, what I already feel to be true, whatever my opinion is, it has to be true. There's a lot of confirmation bias in there as well. It's a really interesting thing to watch. But it's just a shame that somebody who thinks like that and acts like that still has pull in society, still has fans, still has people who take him as a serious person. You know, you're not supposed to, if you're one of the other news channels or somebody else who's in the media, you're not supposed to say that Fox News is biased and they're not real news. You know, the rest of the media crushes you and cracks down on you if you dare utter words like that. But we all know that's true. We all know that's factual. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We will talk to Lilith Penn about what's going on in Texas right now. Then later on in the show, got some more great stuff. Oh, God, I have another Michelle Bachmann clip. We have a crazy Christian Taliban pastor who's going to tell you what he thinks about gay marriage. We got all that and much, much more. Stay right there, guys. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, my pretties. I'm very happy to welcome here with us Great Secular Talk Radio Network member and science correspondent and all that fun stuff, Lilith Penn. Lilith, what's going on?
Hey, not much. I am having a fantastic day.
Really? I'm very curious.
Yeah.
I'm very curious as to the details of that.
Oh, you of all people should know.
Yeah, I was going to say, first and foremost, of course, the big news is, we talked about this briefly yesterday at the beginning of the show, it appears as if, now you could give me, I might be missing some of the details here, I just have the broad stroke, so you could tell me where I'm wrong, or you could fill in the blanks here, but as far as I read, it appears like Texas did the exact same thing that Oklahoma did with gay marriage. Am I right about that?
Sort of. Okay, so what actually happened is there was a judge named Orlando Garcia, and he is a federal judge in San Antonio. There were actually two gay couples involved in this one. I know that there's a third gay marriage case that's working its way through the court. But basically, he said that the reason why gay marriage has been so difficult to work around here in Texas is because it's interstate constitution, which whenever the Supreme Court had told California, like basically if it's already interstate constitution, then you don't have to change it. But if it's not, then you know. Yes, since it's not in your state constitution, yes, we're repealing Prop 8. So it's a little bit of a different situation here because it is, unfortunately, in our state constitution that marriage is between a man and a woman and basically leaves me out in the cold.
Yeah, but wasn't it like that in Oklahoma or no? I thought they had it in their constitution
No, they didn't have it in their constitution. It was just a very, very long-standing law. I think it was originally supposed to be in the Constitution, but they voted it down or it never got to a vote or something. But as far as I know, I think Texas is the first state that's actually been struck down where it was actually in our state Constitution.
Okay, and so tell me exactly how – so is it a situation like this where, okay, it was in the state Constitution, now it was struck down. Was it struck down – first of all, by a federal circuit court judge or by a state judge?
It was struck down by a federal district court judge, so it will go to the Fifth Circuit Court for appeals. That's
okay.
One spot we might run into a little bit of problems because they are known for being very, very, very conservative. But I read bits and pieces of the brief that Judge Garcia put out. And he's, for reasons on why he said that it was unconstitutional, he quotes Scalia of all people. And it fits perfectly. Basically, what he quoted on Scalia is, it said, just because something is tradition is no reason to make a law against it. And it was originally from Lawrence versus Texas, which overturned Texas sodomy law.
Yeah,
I read
something about that earlier, but I was kind of thrown off by the article. I think we might have read the same article on that, but I was kind of thrown off by it because it appeared like Scalia came down on the wrong side in Lawrence versus Texas. He voted that he said that states should be able to, for people who are listening who don't know what that was the case that basically made it so that states can't ban gay sex, right? They said you're not allowed to legislate that, you know, sodomy laws that say, you know, people can't put their pee-pees and their hoo-hoos where they want to put it. But so he came down on the wrong side of that. So I was curious, the part that he quoted of Scalia, was Scalia using that argument in the context of his argument and the guy just used it for the other conclusion? I was kind of thrown off by that.
I believe so. But essentially from what I read, like, it makes sense. And the parts of the brief that I read, I really, and of course, the one thing I don't like that he did is he did go ahead and grant a stay. So as of right now, the ban is still in effect, but he did grant a stay on it until the appeals.
Here's another question, because there's multiple layers to this. So was the decision that, hey, the ban on gay marriage in the state constitution is unconstitutional, Or was it a step further than that? That, hey, the ban is unconstitutional, and also you have to allow gay marriages, because those are two different things.
Yeah, it struck it down saying that it was unconstitutional. I don't think it said anything about gay marriage having to be legal, but basically the thing is especially the. And I know because I'm here, but especially, like, the Texas, like, gay rights lobby and all that, like, they're really, really pushing for that if they do bring up a vote for to legalize gay marriage, anyone who stands against it, they're going to have a hell of a fight on their hands because, like, everybody down here, we're raring to go. because it was I was actually in my Texas government class today, and someone's like, "Well, why don't you just go to like New Mexico and get married?" I'm like, "No, it's
fuck
a
you. Go
of
to New
Mexico.
You go to New Mexico to get married, motherfucker."
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's a point of pride for me to get married here, and then.
What a dick thing to say. What a dick thing for that person to say.
I haven't even gotten to it. So this one guy, and you'll love arguing with him, he's about 19 and one of the biggest conservatives I've ever seen. And he's like, yeah, well, that's just disgusting because being gay is a choice. So I had to take the line from you, Tara, and said, you know what? I know like you're dating Jenny, but I want you to wake up tomorrow and say, you know what? I don't want Jenny. I want to go fuck Jack today and tell me that it's a choice. Needless to say, that shut him up pretty fast, and I
nearly
got
to that. I bet he is gay. I bet he's from a really religious family, and he's gay. And he's like, I'm struggling with these feelings, so I'm going to lash out.
He has a more feminine voice than I do.
Game, set, match. I'm already calling it. Based on this limited evidence, I'm already calling it.
Yeah, and it's just like, I mean, and that's the way how it is, because he's super conservative. I'm, you know, the uber lib in the class. So me and him go back and forth constantly, and my professor is always trying to be the ringleader, and nobody else jumps in on the conversation because they're all too scared to, apparently.
Oh, don't worry. I mean, I remember when I was in college, I mean, you know me, I can't shut the fuck up. If we're talking about something like that involves politics, I always have to say some shit.
In my class. That would have been awesome.
But you know what? It's weird. I couldn't get a gauge of what the people in the class thought of me. Like I like to think that some of them thought like, oh yeah, you go, man, in their head. But then again, there's a lot of people who I'm sure were like, oh, it's this asshole who never shuts the fuck up. So it's weird.
Yeah.
It was a weird situation, but I couldn't help myself. I just had to. It's like I blurted stuff out after a while.
And honestly, like, I'm kind of past the point of caring what they would think of me personally because I'm not even going to be there next semester. So I got accepted into school that I really wanted to go to. So that was a really big thing. But,
so what I'm wondering about is we're seeing the snowball effect, of course. But, again, I always mention how it's going to – inevitably, we're going to get it on a federal level. And it's just a question of how we get it on a federal level. And I'm beyond frustrated, I have to say, because I know we keep seeing advancement, but it's almost like that advancement, it has a counterintuitive effect on me where I'm like, can we stop fucking around now? Can we just get it on a national level? You know what I mean? Like,
we know
where it's ending up, so why are we fucking – it's like you know you're going to have sex with somebody and you've been doing foreplay for 27 minutes, and you're like, all right, let's go already. What is this?
Exactly. And, I mean, it's why there's one thing that drives me nuts about it is, like, okay, DOMA, like, them overturning DOMA and Prop 8, that was a great, great move. It was a great day. But at the same time, and I share your opinion on that, I think it could have gone further. I think they could have
said, they didn't go far enough. 100%.
Yeah,
100%.
At the very least, the thing is, you know, I'm kind of at the point right now that I'll take what I can get because, as you know, and any listeners who were listening last month, my fiance happens to be British. So because of DOMA, I can get her over here on a fiance visa, but it kind of sucks because my state won't recognize it. But that's what they should have done is they should have said, yeah, you have to recognize it. And I can kind of understand I don't agree by any stretch of the imagination, so don't mistake my understanding for agreement. I can kind of understand why they did that to appease some people because, of course, it was, you know, a massive issue. But, yes, they should have said, okay, not only does the federal government recognize it, you have to make it legal.
Yeah,
I don't like the fact that they left it up to the state. And that's the big thing. That's the big thing in Texas is it is whether – it's a 14th Amendment right with due process and being treated equal under the law versus a states' rights issue. And I was sitting there, I'm like, guys, states' rights issue, they don't have a leg to stand on because this is a human rights kind of thing. You know?
Well, here's
the
thing. For people who don't know what we're talking about, let me break it down a little bit for them real quick. So with the DOMA and Prop 8 decision that everybody was happy about not too long ago, what the Supreme Court said was, hey, DOMA, which is the Defense of Marriage Act, which basically defined marriage as between a man and a woman on a federal level. So in other words, even if a state recognized gay marriage or passed a law that allowed gay marriage, you still were, those marriages weren't accepted on the federal level because federal law trumps state law, and federal law says marriage is only between a man and a woman. So what the Supreme Court for DOMA, what the Supreme Court decision on DOMA did is it said, we're going to strike down DOMA as unconstitutional. But here's the big thing where you and I get angry and where the people who wanted them to go further get angry, is what that decision does is it says, okay, now the states can determine if they want to have gay marriage. So each state can determine, New York, California, Hawaii, yay, gay marriage all day long. But you still, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, those states are still not going to fucking get gay marriage forever unless the courts get involved, right? So what we wanted to happen is we wanted the Supreme Court to find that, you know, the 14th Amendment protection or equal protection under the law, right, that applies to for gay marriage. That equal protection under the law means that gay people have a right to marry just like straight people do. And they didn't make that decision. I hope eventually they do. They didn't make that decision this time. And I got to say, I've become so emboldened in against the people who disagree on that. Like, I had somebody on Twitter the other day who was talking to me about it, and he's like, you don't get it, man. I agree with gay marriage, but you're wrong as to it being protected under the 14th Amendment. And then he said, the 14th Amendment was specifically for African Americans. And I said, I know it was specifically for African Americans. But if you take the literal reading of the text and you use your mind and you deduce, you go, oh, okay, this should apply to gays too. It's one of those things, you know? So and then the response is, yeah, but under your definition, then, you know, people can marry children and brothers can marry sisters. And I said, whoa, wait a second, no. Under your strict definition of the 14th Amendment that it only applies for black people, then that means that a state can ban marriage between Republicans if they want to, right? Exactly. And they can say, oh, sorry, we don't want any Republicans getting married, so we're going to ban them. Okay, that would clearly be a violation of the 14th Amendment, even though, yes, the 14th Amendment was originally written specifically to protect race. But it's still a violation because you're not protecting equally under the law. By the same token, if you're not allowing gay people to get married to who they love, you're not equally protecting under the law. The arguments against it are so silly. They're just, every single argument against it is just so silly. It's people twisting themselves into intellectual pretzels to bend over backwards and say, no, it can't be this because of that. But it's like, there was a great article on Think Progress earlier. I put it on the Facebook page. I tweeted it out. And it's about how the same arguments that, you know, with the whole thing in Arizona going on right now and the law that Jan Brewer vetoed, thank goodness.
Oh, we had a fight over that today in class, too.
But there was an article that said, it showed you the literal quotes that the exact same arguments being used about religious liberty, that said, this is all about protecting Christians' rights and religious liberty for them to make the choices with their own businesses. Those are the exact same arguments that were made when people were not letting black people into their stores, into their places of business, not treating them equal. The exact same argument. Is that people act like, back in the 1950s, 1960s in Mississippi, people were coming out and saying, in the law books, N-word this, N-word that, you're inferior. No, they still had to, sugarcoat it and make the argument sound more appealing so they would dress it up with the religious language. Like, no, it's not us. It's God who's against black people. It's in the Bible. Slavery's in the Bible. They're inferior. It's in the Bible. So it's not me that hates black people. I'm just going based off of God, what God says. And if you disagree with me, then you're not respecting my religious liberty. I mean, it's so stupid. It's the same fucking thing we're seeing over and over again. And it's just like the progressives in the country have to drag these morons into 2014. And it just drives me nuts because it doesn't take that much, people. It's not – you don't have to be – I'm not a genius. I'm not some sort of super high IQ guy who can do astrophysics on the weekends to get my kicks. I'm not that bright a person. But I can see – plain trends. I can read an argument and say, oh, that makes sense. Oh, that doesn't make any fucking sense. It's crazy. It drives me crazy that we haven't gotten to that point yet. It's like we're still holding on to these medieval, inferior parts of our brain that just take over. And it's like, oh, I think, me don't like gay. Me don't want to give them rights. What the fuck is that? What are you doing? Go back to the year 1500. Go back to the year 6. You sound silly.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's just, it's one of that, because the hilarious thing about it is, it's just, it absolutely blows my mind that people are like, yeah, well, I don't think, you know, like, well, if we legalize gay marriage, it's going to lead to polygamy and bigamy and incest and all this. Okay, like, the bigamy and polygamy, you know what? And this is where I might get myself in a little bit of trouble. I don't care. Go.
Yeah, I don't care either.
Just go ahead and legalize it. The thing is, and here's what everybody says, oh, well, this is going to lead to pedophilia and...
No, it will not lead to pedophilia because a kid literally cannot consent. They're not sexually mature.
The three words that every single person who's against it just blatantly refuses to recognize are to somebody on my Facebook page the other day. They were like, oh, but I really love my goat. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, get off of my Facebook page if you're going to sit there and you're going to make some stupid argument because, one, it's not human, two, it can't consent, and three, it wouldn't be of legal age anyway. So you can't do it. If it's two consenting adults, then by all means, go ahead. Who cares what you do in your firm?
Everybody knows I'm on the record of being pro-polygamy. I don't give a fuck what you do. I don't care what you do. If you're genuinely, you know, if you actually like, hey, we got this love thing going on. It's me and three women, or me and my guy friend and three women, or whatever. I don't care, man. If it makes you happy, by all means. Now, look, we would have to iron out the details for like tax law in that respect. You know, like how are we going to work this out? Like, obviously that's a complex issue. That's a nuanced issue, and we need to dive into the details. But in terms of the basic premise of it, it honestly pisses me off when people call themselves progressives, but then they draw the line at polygamy. Oh, no, just gay people, it's good. But for polygamy, no, that's too far. Why is it too far? Can you present me an argument, or are you just fucking drawing arbitrary lines like the conservatives do? That's what you're doing. You're drawing arbitrary lines.
Exactly. And it's just like, it almost reminds me of that. One that I think it was Louis Gohmert that did it. It was a few months ago, and man, I cannot tell you how much I hate that guy because he's actually in the district just south of me.
Oh,
and I've got Ralph Hall in mind, so not doing much better here. But it was when he was saying like, "Oh, well, where do you stop?" blah blah blah. But then he did the it was about gun control and limiting the magazine sizes. And he says, like, well, you know, if it's a 10, who says that you can't have 11 or 9? And he was trying to use it to, he was doing like, there needs to be a clear line on gay marriage. And then he basically made the point, using gun control, that there doesn't need to be a line. And that's just like, oh, dude, really? Really? Like, it amazes me some of the idiots we have in Congress.
Guys like Gohmert, they're authoritarian by their nature. So what that means is when he grew up, his life was very laid out in front of him in a very simple way, in the sense that if mom and dad say something, dad is the lead of the household, mom is second in command. If one of them say something, I have to listen to it. This is the way life works. Everybody has the parents, and then there's the kid, and then you go to school, and then you work your way through life, and these are the choices you make, and everything is laid out. It's almost kind of, ironically, it's kind of like Soviet Russia in its you know, doctrinaire way that it's laid out. And he's an authoritarian. So now that he is in Congress and he's got to make decisions on these issues, what does he do? He reverts into his shell, and he thinks, well, how did I grow up? What was the culture that I grew up in? Okay, that's superior. That's right. Those are the clear lines. Any deviation from how I grew up is bad, and I'm not comfortable with it. But it's so pathetic because it's so not worldly. It's just such a childish way of thinking. It's like you're admitting that you don't want to actually discuss things in a serious way, or like try to figure out, hey, maybe somebody could be different from me but work out just fine. It drives me crazy too. But, Lilith, I got to
really
run
does.
Because I got to run. I got 96 stories to get to, but I really loved our conversation.
Absolutely. And, I'll be on. Just let me know whenever you want me on next.
All right, great. And you know you could call up any Friday now. That's the new thing we got going on. Any Friday.
Sweet.
Any member
All
could
right.
call up. Open lines.
I will do that. All right.
All right.
See you later,
man.
Have a good day. Bye.
All right, guys. Let's see how much time I have. Let me throw in one more here before we take our final break, and then at the end, God, for the last 30 minutes, you're going to get a lot of interesting stuff. But first, let's go to Michelle Bachmann. Now, I gave Michelle Bachmann a little bit of credit yesterday because she actually said something for the first time in her life that wasn't batshit insane. that's all gone now. No surprise. We knew she was going to fall off the wagon eventually. She already did. I came to a conclusion this morning. It's based off of this clip you're about to listen to of Michelle Bachmann and Wolf Blitzer. They're going to talk about the Arizona anti-gay law, which has now been vetoed by Jan Brewer. And, of course, this law would have made it possible for businesses to refuse service to a gay person based off their religious beliefs. And they say, you're gay. I don't want to serve your kind. Get out of here. And actually, the law – excuse me. The law was written so vaguely that could have applied to anything. Any genuine religious basis that you dislike somebody or something, you just say, no, we don't want to have anything to do with you. So listen to what she says, and then we'll come back, and I'll tell you my conclusion.
Governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer, should do mm-hmm. with this legislation that was passed by the state legislature that the supporters say is a religious freedom piece of legislation. The critics say it gives an opportunity to discriminate against gays and lesbians.
Well, I think that what we need to do is we need to respect both sides. We need to respect both opinions. And just like we need to observe tolerance for the gay and lesbian community, we have tolerance for the community of people who hold sincerely held religious beliefs.
So should she veto that legislation?
No, I don't think that she should. In my opinion,
that open the door for less tolerance for gays?
Oh, in fact, it's just the opposite. This is a decided level of intolerance. It's effectively eviscerating the First Amendment rights of freedom of speech, expression, and religious expression for the people of Arizona. And it sets a terrible precedent.
But if lesbians won't be able to get services like all other Americans, that's discriminatory against them.
We need to respect the gay and lesbian community, and they need to have access to services.
But if they're treated differently than other Americans, that certainly isn't respectful.
But remember, we are treating people who hold sincerely held religious beliefs differently than other Americans either. This isn't one side or another. What we're talking about is tolerance on both sides, and it is not tolerant to force people to violate their religious beliefs. That's not tolerant.
You're going to be disappointed because I think she's going to veto that legislation.
It looks like she may veto it, but I think that will prove to serve us not very well in terms of tolerance in the United States.
There's a lot of tolerance among Americans. Are very tolerant people.
Well, this,
and there is religious
this is,
freedom.
This is not tolerating people's religious beliefs, and we need to do that.
That's what I disagree. Michelle Bachmann, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Will.
Here's my conclusion. That is the single most embarrassing anti-gay argument used by Republicans. Now, Rush Limbaugh was the originator of that. I talk about that all the time on the show. I've heard him make that argument for years. He was the originator of that. And it's the idea that if we really want to be tolerant, you have to tolerate people who disagree. So it's not us, the Republicans, being intolerant and discriminatory here. It's the liberals. They're the ones who are being intolerant. And they think they're being cute. They think they're being clever. They think they found a loophole. But here's how duncy that argument is. I grant you that for a split second, if you don't think about it, you go, oh, that is okay, that I see where they're going with that. But then the second you actually dig deeper, you realize it's a terrible argument. It's horrible. So that's like a guy who runs the polling station for an election in a town, and he personally, I don't like women voters. I don't like women voting. I believe in the old school method. And then when somebody challenges on that, he says, oh, well, if you disagree with me and you don't like that I'm stopping women from voting, you're intolerant. Wait a second. No, I'm not intolerant. You're intolerant. You're the one that's stopping women from voting. You're asking people to tolerate intolerance and then defining that as tolerance. So that's like a guy saying, well, I think blacks are inferior, and I think they should still be slaves. I think it's just a genetic things going on here. One's superior, one's inferior. Sorry, it is what it is. Oh, you disagree with me? Oh, you're so intolerant. No, you're intolerant. You're the one that said blacks are inferior and you want to make them slaves again. Because I disagree with you, I'm intolerant, so any disagreement with anything is intolerance. It's, you know what it is? It's, they're trying to flip it. They're trying to flip the script. It's, the argument is essentially, I know what you are, but what am I? The old schoolyard second grade trick, and they think it's intellectual, and it's all they got, which shows you how bankrupt they are and how they have no good arguments for their side. All right, we'll take that break. We come back. Catholic League President Bill Donahue is going to talk out of his ass also about gay rights, and we'll get to the Christian Taliban as well. Stay right there.
Hold on, little girl. Show me what he's done to you. Stand up, little girl. A broken heart can't be that bad. When it's through, it's through. Fate would twist the both of you. Come on, baby. Come on over. Let me be the one to show you. With the both of you. Come on, baby. Come on.
All right, guys, welcome back. All right, now we'll go to one of the more annoying people on the planet. Catholic League President Bill Donahue is going to go on CNN and talk about gay rights here. And like he usually does, he's going to just embarrass himself in the worst way.
Are you aware that in Arizona, the LGBT community is not a protected class? Are you aware of that?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't even believe it. Quite frankly, we've had this RFRA law, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, since 1997 at the federal level. Where are the examples of gays being discriminated against? If they're so discriminated against, how can they make more money than straight people on average?
But here's the ball. There are a lot of reasons for how the community does it. It goes to their character
as individuals.
Is somebody
being denied an Applebee's,
right?
Getting a hamburger? Where are these examples of gay people being persecuted?
Now, believe it or not, that interview actually goes on for a while, and Chris Cuomo does a pretty good job pounding that guy into the ground. But what a silly question. I don't even want to go any further and play you any more of that, because he's just not a serious person. Where is the discrimination against gays? How about this? From one Google search, from all different news sites, Washington Post, CNN, local news sites, quote, 38-year-old Johnny Quinn Smith wanted to get an egg salad sandwich for himself and his fiancée, Enrique Boltzmann, but today Quinn Smith encountered something he thought he would never see in his lifetime. A sign that said, service refused to gay couples. April 18, 2013, quote, a Kennewick gay couple denied service at a flower shop for their upcoming wedding. Washington Post, February 19, quote, gay patient says Catholic chaplain refused him last rites. June 1, 2012, a gay HIV-positive man says in court that a hospital denied him treatment and visitors as the doctor remarked, this is what he gets for going against God's will. I mean, the list goes on and on. Quote, Baker refuses service to gay couple. Quote, Monica Ramirez and Jonathan Luna are engaged in looking for the perfect place to host their wedding reception and thought they'd found it at Grace Gardens, a popular venue, except for their pesky no gays allowed policy. I mean... And how about bigger picture? We don't even need to go specific examples here. How about bigger picture? 17 states have gay marriage. The rest of them do not. All right, that's massive discrimination. In 29 states, including Arizona, you can legally fire somebody for their sexual orientation. Oh, where's the discrimination against gays? I don't know where the discrimination is. I don't see it. And even at the beginning of the clip, he said, well, I don't believe that gays are in a protected class in Arizona. Dude, that's a fact. He's not just using that as, like, trying to describe something. That's a legal classification. Protected class is a legal classification. So, for example, race, puts you in a protected class. You can't get fired for your race. You can't get fired for your religion. What's not a protected class in Arizona is sexual orientation. That's a fact. You know, I don't believe it. But it doesn't matter if you believe it. It's the reality. I'm so tired of guys like this, man. I'm so tired. He's just this big, bloviating moron who doesn't read anything, he doesn't know anything, he's just this bigot who goes on air and just spews his garbage, and guys like Chris Cuomo, who usually do a meh job, he actually did, like I said, he did a good job later on down the road there saying to him, he actually said at one point, you don't own the definition of marriage. And what happens when you push back on guys like that? They crumble. Because they don't know anything. They'll either yell and make an ass of themselves even more, or they crumble under the questioning because they don't have an ideology that stands up to scrutiny. Anybody who calls themselves a Catholic when you hear guys like Catholic League President Bill Donahue say shit like that, God, you should be embarrassed, man. Look, I grew up in a Catholic household. I don't know if people know that. So my mother is Catholic. My father was, he was like an agnostic guy, but he was grew up WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And we were raised in the Catholic Church. You know, when we were kids, we had to go to the religious training, CCD they called it, I think, on, so after school some days. I was taken to church until I was, I don't know, maybe 13 or 14 or something like that. My mom made me go until, no, probably younger, 12, 13, something like that. And, I didn't really ever believe it. It's just the whole thing is, it's such a show. Like the guys put on the fucking like half dresses, right? The gowns, there's this big celebration with shitty music, and then they do the potpourri shit, and then you got to pretend to eat the wafer. It's like, it's just so shamelessly made up, man. It really is. And to have guys like this, it already is weak in its presentation, you know, it's already not believable in its presentation. And then to have guys on top of that, like Bill Donahue, who champion themselves, who consider themselves champions of Catholicism, and the dude just makes an ass of himself. He's just a big bigot who's like, religious freedom, but you fuck gays, ban them. Like, how is anybody still, like, appeal? Does this appeal to anybody anymore? There was a great poll the other day that showed my generation has largely turned away from, you know, religion in the sense, like, organized religion. A lot of them still have metaphysical beliefs and spiritual beliefs, but they turn away from organized religion, and one of the main reasons cited was hatred of gay people. They're like, yeah, these guys, they're silly in how they treat gay people. Like, they're childish, they're clownish. Like, why are you hating people? Why would you do that? Like, you're just a person. What's the problem? It's weird to think about, man. I remember, I'm not going to say the dude's name on air, even though I remember it. Or I just remember the first name. I don't remember the last name. But I remember the first time, like, even before anybody explained the concept of gay to me, I remember seeing a kid, when I was in, I must have been third grade or something like that, and I was like, oh, that dude's gay. Like, that dude likes boys. I could tell, right? And that wasn't ever followed up in my head with, like, I got to stay away from him, and that's weird, and that's awkward. It was just like, oh, okay. Just the same way, like, if I looked at, you know, somebody, like a guy who had longer hair, maybe. Like, a guy who had long hair. Oh, okay, that guy has longer hair. And? Like, there's nothing comes after that. Like, oh, okay, this dude is African-American. Okay, and? Like, I never said nothing, no thought ever came after that of, like, I need to stay away, or that's the other, or that's strange. It was just, okay, it is what it is. It's weird to me when people see difference and it's not just a default, like, that's okay, or you celebrate it. When it's a default, stay away from the other, that's a strange mental process, man. I don't grasp that. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around that. Because where does it come from? A lot of people might come from just some innate feeling, but a lot of other people probably comes because it's taught to them through religion. Or through just shitty parents who are bigots. All right, let's move on to Pastor Jeffers. Pastor Robert Jeffers is this extreme conservative Christian, but he always puts on this fake smile and does media appearances and seems like an affable guy. And he always tries to butter over his bullshit. Like, he'll smile to you as he's telling you you're going to burn in hell. Well, Right Wing Watch got their hands on a clip of him letting all the crazy hang out.
As a Christian, I go to the Bible and I see in Genesis chapter 2 and Matthew 19 that God said marriage should be between one man and one woman in a lifetime relationship. And any deviation from that, whether it's adultery, premarital sex, unbiblical divorce, or homosexuality, is wrong.
Now, I mean, obviously you're a church leader and I'm talking to you about a judge's ruling, but this is an issue that you've been pretty outspoken on. Why is it important to you to speak out about this?
Well, as a pastor and as a Christian, the Bible speaks out about it. And as an American, I also realize that no nation can survive that condones what God has condemned. And God has condemned homosexuality just like he does adultery or premarital sex as being wrong.
This is why we call these people the Christian Taliban. Or the American Taliban. That is exactly what they are. Now, that thing, it was riddled with mistakes, and the clip wasn't even a minute long. First of all, he's like, oh, well, in the Bible, then they say the traditional marriage is one man, one woman. No. Biblical marriage is polygamy. How you like them apples? And by the way, the biblical scholars did research where they went to the Bible, they isolated all the instances where some sort of relationship type is brought up, and they categorized it. The number one form of marriage is polygamy. You know what the number two is? It's not one man, one woman. It's people marrying their daughters off to their rapists. Wow. So those are your first two forms of biblical marriage. You want to know what the third one is? This isn't even marriage, but it's one of the things they commonly did in the Bible. Guys are supposed to castrate themselves and live lives of celibacy. All right, man, you want to go act biblically? By all means, be my guest. It's amazing how the guys who claim to believe the Bible is literally true and they're the most convinced by it, they never read it. He never read it. He has no clue the fuck he's talking about. He just said at the end there that, oh, a nation can't survive when it doesn't do exactly what God wants and what it says in the Bible. And he laid out some things, adultery, premarital sex. Whoa. What about the rest? What's going on there? You look like a guy who's pretty clean-shaven, like you probably shave every morning, right? Pastor Jeffers, that's what it looks like. It looks like you got a nice, clean haircut. It's not long, rough around the edges or whatever. You need to die now. That's an abomination in the eyes of God. You're not supposed to cut your hair. You're not supposed to shave your face. You just committed a horrendous sin. You need to die. What happened? Why are you acting like a hypocrite? Why are you picking out that part of the Bible and saying, well, we need to abide by this, but you're not holding yourself to the same standard and following the other parts of the Bible? Why did you get your hair cut? Did you not read the Bible, or do you hate God? What is it? Which is it? I'm curious. And, I mean, we can go on and on. How many times have we been over this, man? Getting piercings, illegal in the Bible. Illegal, not illegal. It's an abomination. You'd be put to death if you get piercings. Tattoos, any sort of so-called body mutilation. You can't eat shellfish. That's a good classic one from Leviticus. Shrimp, crab, lobster, done. No more. Has he ever had it? Probably. Pork, same thing. You ever had pork? Working on Sunday. You do that for a living, you dumbass. This guy's a pastor. All he does is work on Sunday. You're not supposed to work on Sunday. That's an abomination. You should be put to death. Your very profession is an affront to God that you supposedly love. There's slavery in the Bible. So if we don't bring back slavery to the United States of America, according to you, you just said it, then God's going to be mad at us and the nation can't survive. You just said we got to go by the Bible, we got to go by God's standard, or else the nation can't survive. So we have to bring back slavery. That's what we have to do. Slavery's in the Bible. These guys are so silly. Nobody should take them seriously. That's the whole purpose. That's the reason why I'm doing this clip here. Everything you just saw there is fake. It's all contrived with the fake smile and the bullshitty pastor talk and the, well, they think abortion's bad and, really? Where does it mention abortion in the Bible? Crickets. It doesn't mention it. Where does it mention homosexuality? Where does Jesus say anything about it? Oh, that's right. Jesus doesn't say anything about it. It's only in Leviticus, among these other things I just read, and you don't follow them, but you focus on the one about gay marriage. You're picking and choosing. You're picking and choosing. You're making shit up, and you got the fake smile on, and all it is, it's a power trip. Guys like Pastor Jeffers here, he wants more power, more authority, probably has a Napoleon complex. He likes being the leader, even though he hasn't given anybody a legitimate reason to follow him. So what does he do? He takes the easy way out. Oh, just, become part of a religion. Say, pretend like you're speaking for God. It's an easy way to get people to follow you. It's just unearned, lazy authoritarianism is what it is. And his ideas are stupid and pathetic and childish, and anybody who believes them, you need a psych evaluation if you do. All right, now, let's go to, remember at the beginning of the show I said I might actually disagree with an expert on something? Let me explain what I mean by that. I came across a really interesting story earlier by Neil Brady from The Guardian. He spoke about a professor of neuropsychopharmacology from Imperial College London who is inventing a way or trying to invent a way to get drunk without getting drunk. So get the feeling from alcohol without drinking alcohol. It's an alcohol substitute that'll give you all the positive effects of it. He says the idea is to stimulate the GABA receptors in your brain. Okay, that's a brain chemical that's helps suppress the nervous system. It's the same process goes on with things like Valium or Xanax or Klonopin. They work on the GABA receptors. Anti-anxiety stuff work on the GABA receptors. Alcohol does the same thing. So again, the idea is to give you the pleasing effects of alcohol, all of the pluses and none of the negatives. So none of the hangovers, none of the withdrawal symptoms, none of the addiction. All the positives, none of the negatives. And he says, quote, modern science allows us to target the relaxing and intoxicating part while avoiding the bad parts like addiction and withdrawal. So I'm kind of skeptical of this, I have to say. This might be a first. This might mark the first time in secular talk history that I disagree with an expert. I like to give credit where credit is due to everybody who's gone through the process and knows more than I do. And I'm admitting that this, I'm just speculating, and this guy certainly knows a lot more than I do, and you probably shouldn't even listen to anything I'm about to say. How's that for a caveat? But here's the thing. I think the whole purpose of a drug is to make you feel good, whether it's alcohol or cocaine or heroin or Adderall or fucking OxyContin or anything, okay? That's why people do it. If they're doing it recreationally, of course. There's medical reasons to do all those things, weed, everything, okay? But if you're doing it recreationally, the purpose is to feel good. So if you're taking something that's going to alter your consciousness to make you feel good, then by definition, when you don't have that thing, you're going to feel not as good. You're going to feel back to your baseline, which in comparison feels shitty. So I get what he's saying in the sense that, okay, so if you could find a way to take away the actual hangover symptoms and withdrawal symptoms of alcohol, so you take away the horrible I'm sick feeling that I don't want to move and the room is spinning and I want to throw up and all the nausea. Yeah, I get, okay, that maybe you can actually find a way to do that, and that is scientifically possible. But the idea that you can get rid of the addiction of something, but also continue to have it make you feel good? But the whole reason why it's addicting is because it makes you feel good. So if you take away the addiction part of it, then you're taking away the feeling good part of it. Just by they're connected. And actually, in the article, it's funny, in the article, I think it was on Raw Story, it was on Raw Story, but it was from The Guardian. He kind of points that out, too. He's like, we tried for a while to get this thing done, and for a while we thought we couldn't do it. It's not possible to separate the two because the addiction part comes along with the feeling better, feeling good part. But then later on he kind of hedges and says, but now we think we can do it. So I'm skeptical, man. And look, there is evidence contrary to what I'm saying, kind of. So for example, I just forgot the name of the substance. There's a pill, methadone. Like, people could take something that it reacts with your brain in the same way that any opiate does, okay? So it gives you the opiate high without you actually getting high. So you don't want to take opiates, but you're not high, right? That's kind of what methadone is and some other things. So I guess that's what they're talking about, but at the same time, if you talk to people who do methadone, they say you don't feel the same way that you felt when you did the opiate. So it is possible to give people the same chemical feeling or same chemical reaction in their brain without getting the good feeling that comes along with it. But then what's the purpose? See, this is what I'm saying. Again, it could just be my problem, but I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around it, even in theory. Like, I can't even theoretically understand how you can take something like alcohol, which has a lot of good effects and then bad effects later, how you can have the good without the bad, and if that's even possible at all. We'll find out soon enough. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully they find a way to create a liquid or create a pill that gives you the happiness effects of alcohol and the same kind of chemical response without giving you the bad effects. I would love it if that thing exists. I'm just skeptical that it even could exist. All right, now, squeeze in a few more here. Colorado's new corrections department director, Rick Ramesh, decided to spend a night in an isolated cell. So here's a guy who said, you know what, do to me what you do to some of the people who are locked up. Put me in solitary confinement. He wanted to feel some of the impacts of it so he'd have a better understanding and he can craft policy accordingly. So when he did that, he, quote, suffered mental anguish after just 20 hours. These are his words, okay? He wrote an opinion letter to the New York Times on this where he describes feeling twitchy and paranoid, and he now plans to immediately change the rules on solitary confinement for his state. He says that it was a difficult thing to go through for a sound mind, so somebody who goes in already feeling okay and living a decent life or whatever, and when he can't even imagine what it would be like for somebody with mental illness. So, I'm sorry, did I fuck that up? He says he had struggles even with a sound mind, it's an impossible circumstance. So it would feel horrible for somebody who doesn't have a sound mind to begin with. And just to give you some more facts on this, in his state of Colorado, the average time spent in solitary in Colorado is 23 months, and some prisoners spend 20 years with 20 years, oh my God, with limited contact with prison officers or other prisoners. So I give credit to this guy for doing this, because here's a guy who, just like with a lot of the senators or representatives who decided, I'm going to go on food stamps. Let me go on food stamps for a week or a couple days or stay with a homeless person, as some other people have done, to see what it's like so I can understand it better and then craft policy accordingly. So I give credit. I give credit to the guys for doing that, because every time they do it, it's inevitably the same response. Oh, my God, we need to do more to help these people. Oh, my God, this is so obvious. What we're doing is wrong. And in this case, it was the same result. The guy was in solitary for one day. He's like, fuck that. That's crazy. We need to stop that. We need to change that. And you know what? This actually, believe it or not, here's another response I had to this article. I thought, what the fuck are you doing, Obama? It's funny because it's like the Jenna Marbles skit. But no, seriously, because he could end solitary confinement via executive order in all federal prisons right now if he wanted to. He doesn't need to go through Congress for that. He doesn't need to do it. Congress, all spending bills have to, originate from the House, okay? This isn't a spending bill. This doesn't cost any money. You could just stop putting people in solitary overnight. You could just sign an executive order, all federal prisons. But he didn't do it, and it's not even like on his plate. He's not even considering it. But if you look at the evidence on solitary confinement, that's torture. And torture, of course, is unconstitutional. Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, is prohibited. So he should do it, but he won't do it. All right, now, e-cigarettes. I'm kind of brushing through the last ones here so I could squeeze them in. I can't figure out why this is happening so much now, but it's kind of annoying. A lot of states in the U.S. have started to crack down on e-cigarettes, the vapor cigarettes, and they're banning them in some places, and a lot of the places they're banning them, it doesn't even make sense for e-cigarettes, like in closed areas or restaurants or whatever. I think New York was acting on that too, my state. And again, that doesn't make sense to do that for e-cigarettes, and I'll explain why. But let me get through a couple more things here. Now the EU also just banned them. So the EU is doing it on top of places in America, and they also said they're stopping advertising, okay? They're putting graphic health warnings on the packages. They're saying no more graphic health warnings on the packages. I guess some of them, what they did is they compared it to regular cigarettes. And they said, you don't want to do this, right? I mean, look, this is what cancer looks like. We don't give you cancer. And they're saying they want to mandate that companies somehow make the devices childproof. I don't even know how that's possible. And I honestly think that the people that are making the laws, they don't know a fucking thing about e-cigarettes. They're making this up as they go along. So let me explain the way they function. I actually used them for a while. I smoked for like 4 years, 5 years, whatever it was, and then I smoked e-cigarettes for about a year, and then I quit. And what the e-cigarettes are is they're vaporizers. So what they're breathing in, it's not smoke. It looks like smoke, but it's water vapor. It's water vapor and nicotine. Sometimes it's flavored water vapor and nicotine. And nicotine isn't a carcinogen, for those of you who don't know. And nicotine isn't even bad for you. The thing that's bad for you in cigarettes is all the tar and all the chemicals and all the other carcinogens. Nicotine isn't bad for you. And for example, studies actually show increased cognitive effects in people who use nicotine. It prevents Alzheimer's, it boosts growth of blood cells, which can treat diabetes, and in a 2006 Duke study, it found it relieves mild depression. So e-cigarettes are nothing like regular cigarettes. They don't cause cancer, okay? There's nothing bad in them. It's water vapor and nicotine, and they're being treated like they are carcinogenic. So here's my Alex Jones conspiracy theory on this. I think that the different governments are actually trying to extract money or bribes from these companies. Now, that sounds kind of outlandish, but think about it. Whenever, the IRS does audits of places, who do they audit? They audit, companies that aren't giving their payola to the government. You know, just ExxonMobil gives a tremendous amount of money to the government. Citigroup gives a tremendous amount of money to the government. All these big companies that do, they get to get away with whatever they want to get away with, But all the companies that don't, and the companies that make e-cigarettes are some of those companies, Well, they're going to crack down on them until, you know, they, oh, hey, here, we forgot to give you your campaign contributions. Now can you stop fucking cracking down on us? That's my conspiracy. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's right. But here's what's for sure. Either way, they're not acting on good information to try to come down hard on e-cigarettes. They're actually, they're not bad. E-cigarettes are not bad. All right, and last one here. In South Carolina, Deputy Terrence Knox pulled over a 70-year-old man named Bobby Dean Kniepe, noticing his white Ford pickup truck had expired tags. So Knox said that he told Kniepe to stay in the vehicle, but the man just disobeyed the order. Now remember, this is just the side of the officer. We have not seen the dashboard cam yet, and the dashboard cam could prove or disprove what he's saying. So then this 70-year-old man grabbed his cane out of his trunk bed, and what did the officer do? Well, he immediately assumed that it was a gun and shot the senior citizen in the chest. Incredible. So the bullet actually pierced this guy's lung, but somehow he's still alive and in the hospital. So this is a crazy story of, yet again, a police officer acting too quickly, too abrupt, just assuming the worst. And I get it, man. Police officers have a very hard job, and a lot of them mean well and do a great job. But in this case, clearly this guy was in the wrong. You shot a 70-year-old man. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? So now we have this story. And then remember, recently we had a story. It was on Addicting Info. It was an anonymous tip. I think it was in Florida. Somebody gave an anonymous tip that said a certain house they were creating meth in there. They were making meth. And so what did the cops do? They bust down the door. They kicked in the door to the senior citizen's room, and they opened fire. Just an old dude. An old dude was sitting in his bed. He got lit up. He died. He got shot I don't even know how many times. Craziness. And what happened? There was no meth in the room. Whoa! Like, you think that this is shit that only happens in, like, you know, Zaire or Zimbabwe or Soviet Russia. No, no, this is happening in America. Believe you me, it's happening here. And also there was the story where the police officer killed a young teenage kid who was holding his Wii controller. It was an officer that came to the house to serve parole or probation papers to the father and just saw the kid holding the Wii controller, immediately assumed it was a gun, killed the kid. What are you doing? What is this, man? How many stories have we read like this? There's so many of these stories. And I know this is an outlandish thing to say. Nobody really holds this opinion, but I've come to this conclusion based off there's so many stories, we just can't continue like this. What we should do in America, the rounds that should be in the gun, okay, you can have regular bullets on you, but the rounds that should be in your gun should be dummy rounds, incapacitating rounds. You shoot somebody, you incapacitate them for 10 minutes or some sort of human tranquilizer that puts them out for a half hour or whatever, because obviously the shoot first policy and the loaded gun policy is failing tremendously because you kill so many innocent people in the process of doing your job. I'm not saying you can't have guns. You can have guns, okay? But it has to be maybe keep the guns in the car, keep the ammo separate from the gun that you have available at all times. And the initial rounds should not be live rounds because you've killed so many innocent people. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Love you to death. I got 5 seconds left. Mwah. Peace. Come back tomorrow.